You're tuned to Tidings, and I'm Hazel Khan. I'm very pleased to be introducing our listeners to my guest, John Christian Pfeiffer, Executive Director of Larkspur Conservation and President of the Conservation Burial Alliance. He's speaking to us from Tennessee. The subject of my conversation with JC is natural burial, a practice both very ancient and suddenly now new all over again, that it's also a subject that some people might find uncomfortable. Although once you hear JC talk about conservation and natural burial, I'm willing to bet that you're going to want to listen to everything he has to say. So welcome to Tidings, JC, and welcome to WPKN.
Thank you so much for having me, Hazel.
I'm very much looking forward to what you're going to tell us and which, until our brief conversation that we had a few days ago, was all brand new to me. You're also the first person I've ever talked to in the funeral industry. So could we start by you telling us how you came to be part of it?
Sure, absolutely. I grew up on a small farm in West Tennessee and was a child of Mother Nature. I joked Mother Nature was my babysitter. I had two brothers, and we spent our whole childhood playing outside and just really being enveloped in this world of wonder. And being so tied and connected to a landscape and to the natural world, I was able to develop a keen sense, even at a young age, of respect for the natural world, but I would say admiration for the cycles of life. And I was able to peer into and see death at a young age in a bit of wonder. I'm probably from maybe 6, 7 years old, going out to the water spigot where the water hose was wound up and there was a bucket that would catch the drip. And I would look into the bucket and I would see these insects that met their demise in the water bucket. I would run into the kitchen and I remember grabbing a fork out of mother's kitchen drawer, and I would go out to the edge of the woods, knelt down below a little small canopy of trees, and I would dig a small hole, and I would take that insect and wrap it in a leaf and place it neatly in the ground and then slowly cover it over. And I don't know why I felt so drawn to care for little things like that, but I felt it was important to pause. And as a child burying an insect, becoming a hamster, and then my parakeet Billy, and calves on the farm, and just different things that I experienced, life and death, in ways that must have drawn me into the proclamation that I want to be a mortician, and telling my parents that. I think they joked and laughed it off. I did waver and explore in my high school days. But right after high school, I was drawn right back after the death of my grandfather. And that experience of watching my family come together and mourn and share emotion and vulnerability, but also in a great act of love in honoring my grandfather, was just very inspiring to me. And it drew my attention right back to where it had been that whole time, as if it had been sleeping dormantly. And I went into mortuary college. I received a full scholarship from the Tennessee Funeral Directors Association. And I spent 15 years or so in the conventional funeral industry, where I was an embalmer and a funeral director. And I ultimately managed a large funeral facility in Nashville after having worked and lived at the small hometown funeral home that I grew up around.
When you were doing all these things as a child, did you also include grieving, or were you just being very efficient and procedural about it, or did you have associated emotions with it?
Maybe there was a moment of being somber, or awe, where I didn't fully understand why or how, but there was something that was magical about it.
What was magical? You mean the transformation from life to death, or?
I think life in general, that whole idea that for one moment we are here and then in the next we can be gone. mysteriousness about the process of life and death, and that when you are so close to the veil, you feel as if you have a more keen appreciation for life. I know I definitely have developed that over time. So yeah, I just feel really inspired by death and the mystery of it all. I'd always been an emotional child. In high school, my part-time job after school was working at the local pharmacy, and I would deliver medicine to elderly folks that didn't drive any longer, couldn't get out. So I would go visit with them and spend time with them in their home when dropping off medicine. So I just kind of developed a way to be with people, be with older people. So for me to then put on a little suit and stand in the funeral home and talk to folks as they came in and out to grieve and to pay tribute to people that they'd lost, I was just doing a grown-up thing that I'd been doing all along as a little boy in the woods, you know?
When you say a little suit, you mean you were doing it as a child as well?
No, I'm a small person, I always was. I'll put this little suit on and, you know, I'm going to play the role of a funeral director as a young man that doesn't know much about anything yet, but is trying to learn, you know? They always called us schoolboys. If you were a young man or a young woman in the funeral industry, you would be like, oh, well, yeah, we've hired a schoolboy and he's going to come. He's learning how to be a funeral director or mortician. So that's some of the language that's worn off on me, a little suit, meaning the schoolboy's got his suit on and he wants to learn how to be a funeral director now. So probably something that historically been used in the funeral industry as someone that's fledgling and learning. Rather than saying apprentice or student learner, they just may say, well, they're a schoolboy. We have a schoolboy that's helping us now, and he's learning how to learn the trade and provide help and care to people. So we were also the ones that were often in our little suits, mowing the front lawn of the funeral home or taking flowers to the cemetery, running errands.
Are there women in that industry?
Oh, yes. Some people may disagree with me, but I find that women are much better funeral directors than men. They tend to be more sensitive, sometimes more caring. A bit of a motherly disposition is very helpful when someone's experiencing something so uncomfortable and foreign, maybe. We're all children when it comes to death, I think, in the sense that we know so little and we've taught ourselves so little. So to have someone that's a guardian or a caretaker or to guide us through the process is extremely important. And there's more women in the funeral industry now than there ever have been.
Very interesting.
I went to school with a lot of women that were learning to become funeral directors, and I love them dearly. Today, they're some of the best morticians that I know.
So you've given us a very full and most interesting picture of how you entered the funeral industry. And now, if you could talk about the role of the funeral industry or funerals in general in our culture, well, let's say our Western, let's say maybe our American culture.
I find that in today's culture of death in America, very few have a good understanding of the processes of what happened to our bodies after death, what the rules and laws and regulations in a municipality may be around how to care for a body and what is truly required or what is just a rule created by the funeral industry. Hospital systems have created how to handle death in their facilities. And we've kind of lost touch with death in the home, where it used to be very common for us to care for our loved ones and provide medical care at home and experience death in the house. Now it is oftentimes happening in a medical facility or away from home. There are a lot of folks that are receiving care through hospice in the home now, and that's wonderful, but it's not something that's available and accessible to everyone.
Also, we don't know how to prepare ourselves so that when death does occur.
Because we do not discuss death like we do every other part of our lives. When something does happen, we are met with a great unraveling because we are simply ignorant to what we should be doing and how to do anything. We have meltdowns and we completely lose our faculties. All we know to do is look outside ourselves for help. And we end up outsourcing a lot of rituals that used to be historic practice for folks. everything's whisked away and gone behind a veil of secrecy. We don't know what the embalming process, the cremation process looks like. We have this fantasy of a beautiful pyre and fire, but we have no idea that cremation is actually just a large furnace with a chamber where a body is inserted, cremated using extreme heat, and then the bones are ground into powder and returned to us as what we know as ash. If people knew more about that process, they would not choose cremation so much. But the use of chemical embalming, largely formaldehyde-based, it's something that's just very bizarre if you were to take a closer look at it. What we should be doing is just slowing down and taking time to be with the body and not using chemicals. The chemicals that are used generally in embalming are also flushed into the local municipal sewer system. People don't know that. And I know a lot of funeral directors, including myself, that always felt something just didn't seem right there, you know?
That's a very graphic description.
It is.
And I'm grateful for it.
I think it's important for people to understand.
Absolutely. As I said, people might be uncomfortable with our conversation, but I hope they'll still stay with us. The other thing that you talked about to me originally was about the coffins.
Right, and all the caskets that we use today. How did we actually get here? Caskets were originally made by cabinet makers who also had a dry goods store or general store. And funeral directors didn't have a true profession because families took care of everyone in history's past. Only until the Civil War did we see the advent of chemical embalming and practicing on a Civil War battlefield to convey Northern states back to their homes in the North following death on a Southern battlefield. They did that because transportation was a horse and cart or train. And for the body to be returned to the family, it needed some form of care to prevent of the decomposition that would occur over such a long trip. So the funeral director became somewhat of a professional. Post-industrial America also grew to sanitize and make things clean and tidy. And that further perpetuated the use of these chemicals and the use of making things all tied up neatly in a bow.
And in a box,
yeah. And sometimes inside of another box, you know, but what are we really locking away and to what cost are we doing this? Environmentally, of course, there's a huge cost in a cemetery that's perpetually cared for forever.
And it's not just a regular box.
Oftentimes, caskets are made of steel. When early on, they were made of local lumber by a cabinet maker, but now we've evolved into precious exotic hardwoods from mahogany to local cherry, cedar, all of these hardwoods that take a very long time to grow now being used in casket manufacture. And then they're lacquered with chemical sealant and polished, and they've got a velvet polyester interior. See the metal caskets that are made of solid copper or solid bronze or stainless steel or just typical normal steel. And then they're painted and placed inside of a concrete or metal vault or outer burial container that helps prevent the earth from touching the casket. All of those things going into the ground, we've only seen one example of this for so long, but there are other ways. And that's where we start talking about conservation burial and natural burial, looking beyond cremation and a traditional funeral and burial, how we might leave a lasting legacy for our towns, our communities, our landscapes.
John Christian Pfeiffer is talking about natural burial and conservation. This is Hazel Kahn and Tidings on WPKN Radio.
For future generations, and a way for us to give all of our nutrients in our bodies actually back to the environment. You know, dust to dust, very true, to be able to give all of this back.
That is what we're going to talk about next. I'd like you to explain to our listeners what natural burial and conservation, what it means.
Natural burial is not new at all. Like you said earlier on, people through millennia have been caring for their dead by placing their unembalmed body directly into the ground, maybe in some type of a shroud, some type of a casket or basket that they have made, and allowing the body to naturally return to the soil. Long time ago, there was no such thing as a copper, solid copper cat, unless you were of extreme wealth. And a very long time ago, cremation was only reserved for those that were very wealthy because it took so much wood to burn, and it was a very expensive process. Natural burial eliminates the use of chemicals, metals, plastics, concrete. It really allows for minimizing our carbon footprint and taking into consideration the ecology of the world and nature. When we pair that with land conservation efforts, like a conservation easement or a deed restriction that perpetually protects a landscape, regardless of owner, from development, mining, timber harvest, when we pair both of those together, we're able to create public open green space and protect a landscape forever from misuse. At the same time, we create a space that's a living memorial that honors our dead, and we are creating a perpetual carbon sink. We're talking about ritual, tradition, ecology, climate.
Let's make it more concrete. Let's imagine the notional person who's died. How does that person then get from whatever the scene of death is to you, your organization, to the natural grave? How does it work?
Generally speaking, when someone dies, a medical professional has been overseeing some type of care for the person, and the doctor will sign the death certificate. And the family has a choice for care of the body, take care of everything on their own. Most of the time, the family calls upon someone for some outside help. Perhaps it's simple transportation, bathing and cleaning the body and keeping the body cool until burial. In conventional settings, it may be that the body is then embalmed and or prepared for cremation. But at Larkspur, the body is kept cool and clean for as long as needed before burial. Generally, we do not encourage anyone to rush through a process unless there's a particular religious wish.
But tell people what Larkspur is.
Sure. Larkspur Conservation is the organization that I helped found in 2013. And we are a nonprofit organization in Tennessee whose goal is to conserve land through a revival of natural burial practices. We have created Tennessee's first nature preserve for natural burial, where people can be buried in the nature preserve without the use of chemicals, plastics, metals, or concretes, drawing upon historic practices of many different cultures, using conservation as a tool to create a truly protected environment and living memorial to those that we love. That's also open to the general public so they can come hike, birdwatch, be in nature, at the same time, a place where people can come care for their dead and remember someone. So people have an option in our community of bringing their loved one to Larkspur. Generally, that's done by a funeral director. We have had on occasion families who cared for their own at home. That is perfectly legal in every state of the nation for a family to act as their own funeral director and care for their dead. But not everyone is equipped to do all of that on their own. Oftentimes, they will rely on the guidance and support of a funeral director. I will say the funeral industry is an industry driven by product and profit in many cases. But funeral directors are helpers. So at Larkspur, oftentimes, our funeral directors are the ones that help a family bring their loved one to Larkspur. And then we come into the nature preserve and we have a walking procession to the graveside, lay our loved one down using ropes, lowering them into the ground and covering over the soil, and then placing flowers. And then in later seasons, coming back to plant wildflowers that will benefit the pollinators or restore tree canopy.
The hole has been done beforehand. Is it as deep as a normal grave would be, and there's no kind of container at all?
Before the family arrives, we generally will open the grave, have everything prepared and ready for them when they arrive at an appointed time. The grave is generally dug at 3 to 3.5 to 4 feet deep. Deep enough to avoid any type of disturbance of the grave, but it's shallow enough that the organic matter in the grave can be absorbed into the ecosystem and used by the plants and communities in the soil itself, because the soil is alive. Families fully participate in that process of laying someone to rest, and sometimes has chosen to simply wrap their loved one in a shroud. We also use a woven basket, generally made of willow, or a simple pine coffin or pine box. We have a varying clientele that we talk through with the family or the person that's planning ahead for themselves, so that they can make the decision that's best for them.
Mm-hmm. So describe the area that's being conserved.
I refer to our cemetery or our burial ground as the nature preserve. It's 161 acres currently. It will grow to be larger than that over time as we continue to save land around the particular parcel. This is a way that you can create public green space and fund it through burial.
Does the family get to choose exactly where the grave will be and then afterwards mark it in some way?
Yes, families are able to choose the grave. We will, after the burial occurs, record GPS coordinates on the actual gravesite and place a medallion that is the only item on the grave that is non-biodegradable. So we have a permanent marker. Also use a native stone if a family so chooses, that's simply carved with the name and the years of their life. We believe that in nature, we are all equal. There are no obelisks, no crosses, no symbologies of any kind. It's a neutral place where everyone becomes a part of this living memorial. But also it's a gift to the community.
People who live around there or tourists, they know it's a cemetery.
They do. Mm-hmm. We have folks that come just for their exercise that do not have someone buried in the nature preserve. And then we have many people that have someone buried in the nature preserve that come for a visit, but also for exercise.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What kinds of things have you heard among family members for or against all of this? Well, there must be some families in which this is actually a very controversial action.
We haven't had a lot of pushback from anyone that has challenged the way we are caring for people or the land. People tell me, I can't imagine doing it any other way, or why haven't we been doing it this way all along?
They could have a viewing of the body just before burial.
Oh, yes, we do that all the time. We still have families that will have a full mass, a church funeral, maybe gathering at a place other than Larkspur prior to burial. Natural burial is just a new take on an old tradition that give people a more mindful option when considering what to do with their body at the end of life. Because I spent 15 years of my career in the conventional setting, managing every little detail. What I noticed was people would observe a burial happening. There was not much participation. And at Larkspur, you're able to take up a shovel, physically lower the body into the ground. You walk with purpose into the nature preserve in an old fashion, remembering and honoring. People create their own ritual and their own meaning.
Let me ask you about Larkspur flowers. I happen to really love, I knew Larkspur as I was growing up. Why did you choose the Larkspur? Is it a local flower?
It is. We do have a species of larkspur called Delphinium tricornae, which is a dwarf larkspur that grows in the woodland. It's growing right now, actually, starting to bloom. It's an ephemeral flower, just really dainty and beautiful. We chose it as a name for our organization. It's a reminder to us that our lives are fleeting. They are ephemeral. Ephemerals are wildflowers that bloom in the spring. And what that means is as soon as it gets warm enough, it will grow, it will blossom, and it will seed, and it will die back all before the leaf canopy comes on the trees. And it has this short window to do everything in its life that it can to procreate, live on for the next generation. And I feel like there's some wisdom from the natural world to us as we're going about our daily lives, to make the most of it. So that's why we were drawn to it and using it as a name for our beloved organization.
I'll never look at Larkspurs in the same way again. I just want to make mention another not conventional form of burial, and that's human composting. But unfortunately, we really don't have time to talk about that. So if people do want to...
I would suggest people look at Recompose, which is a business in Seattle, Washington, that has created the process of human composting, which is placing the body into a vessel large enough to accommodate organic matter like alfalfa and wood chips and straw, keeping the body in that vessel a month to 2 months before the bones are removed and pulverized into a powder and then reintroduced to the mulch or compost that is created from all of the liquid in the body being absorbed into the plant material. And then the option is there for a family to take that material home or to donate it to a public park or place that can receive a truckload or so of that material. It's growing in popularity around the country. It is legal in New York, but it's not practiced there yet because you do have to create a facility to house all of the bodies for so much time. And there's processes that go about everything, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
That process of human composting, you can learn more about it by visiting Recompose. Just Google them and you'll be able to find out and learn more about their processes. It's a solution that is less intense than cremation, that is good for urban cities without land for conservation.
So, thank you
for letting me speak so candidly about so many touchy topics today. I hope that the people that have stuck with us can appreciate it. And it's a sensitive topic. It's good that we have these conversations.
Yeah. I must ask you, given that your name is John Christian, may I take the liberty of asking you if you are actually Christian?
You know, I was raised in the South and taken to church as a form of socialization, because when you live like we did in the country without neighbors close to you, but I wouldn't call myself a Christian. I've seen so many different expressions of belief and theology, the funeral practices that I've been a part of, that I'm open to a lot of interpretations. It makes me a better help to be open to everyone's different beliefs. I like to believe in nature and that nature is the great equalizer and we can find commonality there.
Okay, very good. So as we leave, though, tell our listeners how they can find out more about you and
learn more about us at larkspurconservation.org. That's Larkspur, LARKSPUR, conservation.org. And you can learn more about conservation burial and the work that's being done around the country to create more conservation burial grounds by visiting the conservationburialalliance.org.
Thank you very much, John Christian Pfeiffer. This is going to be a very important half hour for our listeners, as it has been for me. So thank you very much. And I look forward to keeping in touch with you.
Thank you, Hazel. Please do.
Yeah. Thank you, John Christian Pfeiffer. Be well.
You've been listening to John Christian Pfeiffer talking from Tennessee about natural burial and conservation. You can hear Tidings on the second Wednesday of the month at this time and any time at all as podcasts on hazelkahn.com. If you've enjoyed this interview and all the other interview programs on WPKN, please let us know by making a sustainable donation on wpkn.org. Thank you very much. I'm Hazel Kahn.